Good morning, everyone. Today's daf is Lamed Tes in Masechta. We're behind. We're back on Lamed Zayin and Beis, and we're dealing with the eight cases. There are going to be eight cases which the Gemara is going to discuss right now regarding a scenario where there are conflicting claims against an estate, and we're going to go through all eight. We started number one yesterday. We're going to go back. We're going to start from number one again. Just before we begin, thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Let's take a look at case number one again. Before we get to do with the cases, remember the reason why we're dealing with all these cases is because our Mishnah describes a scenario in which we do not know who a person's father is. His father. That's exactly the point. We don't know who it is. But we have a Yavam and the Yavam, and he takes his Yavam, he takes his sister-in-law for marriage to perform the mitzvah of Yibam, and he does so, but the problem is he does so prematurely. He needs to wait a three-month waiting period in order to make sure that she's not pregnant from the first husband, because she is pregnant from the first husband, and the baby comes out to be a viable baby. So then there's no mitzvah of Yibam, as we've been describing now time and again. If she wasn't pregnant from the first pregnancy, so that means there's a mitzvah of Yibam, and he's going to go ahead and produce an offspring, Lahakim Zera, in order to perpetuate the legacy. Wonderful. Here it was not wonderful, because here the man took her 2 months after she became a widow, and he impregnated her, or possibly impregnated her immediately, and the baby came out 7 months later, so now we have a legitimate suffix. We do not know whether or not this child is a product of the first union, and it was right before he died he impregnated her, or maybe it was a product of the second union, and he impregnated her right away. So this child remains now, what is a suffix? He simply doesn't know. From this point going forward, we're just going to simply refer to this child as suffix. Okay, that's not his name, but for all intents and purposes, it might as well be. Meaning that he doesn't know. He doesn't know who his father is. So as we pointed out yesterday, he can become a Kohen Gadol. Okay, that's the Gemara said yesterday. Just the Gemara's way of saying that in terms of his lineage, in terms of psul, he has no psul whatsoever. So he is eligible, he's a candidate to become a Kohen Gadol. By the way, that of course means he's a Kohen, but not everyone can be Kohen. I can't become a Kohen Gadol. So, in other words, right, well, that would make sense. I mean, they're brothers, so. So he could become a Kohen Gadol. Good. That's in terms of his spiritual heights. But there's spiritual heights, and then there's money, and money's a whole different story. Money's always a whole different story. So money here is a whole different story. And now the question is Yerusha. So there's an inheritance, and obviously now because he does not know who his father is, so he's going to make a claim. But every time he makes a claim, understand that his claim has not have certainty. Every claim that he makes, by definition, he's a suffix, and therefore his claim is going to be a suffix as well. And so what the Gemara is going to go through is eight different scenarios in which we're going to look at various cases where he dies, he dies, I'm pointing different he's, even though I have nothing written on the board. But in other words, there are various cases where various people die, and we're talking now about a distribution of the estate, and based on the fact that he's a suffix, so the resulting halacha is going to be different from time to time. Let's go case number one. Case number one is...
The case that he has to do the chalitza and let go, right? Of the wife.
Yeah.
So what happens if there's no other children, nobody else, what happens to Yerusha in that case?
So if he did chalitza, then that's it. In other words,
the son would get...
There is no son. If he did chalitza.
Yeah.
No, he had a son. And he had to go...
The cases we're dealing with is where the brother did the mitzvah of Yibam and produced a child. And the child, we don't know who was the father. Is the father the... If there's chalitza, that means there was no child. By definition, that's what chalitza means. Chalitza means there was no child, and he's not interested in perpetuating the legacy. We're talking right now where there was a mitzvah of Yibam that was done, but now unfortunately, because he did it prematurely, we don't know if it's his son or it's his brother's son. We're going to see what happens. So, Safi V'yavam, Shabbat Lachlak V'nechse Misna. So, let's deal with now case number one. Case number one, a very straightforward case. So, the Safik is, and the Yavam, meaning the, and the brother-in-law. So, the brother-in-law who may be his father. Right? So, again, we're going to go, that's exactly the point. So, Safik V'yavam, Shabbat Lachlak V'nechse Misna. So, they're coming to divide the estate of the one who died. Okay, and Suffolk Amar Anna Bar Misnahu. So the Suffolk comes along and now makes the following claim. Look, I'm his son. Meaning, I'm the son, and therefore I'm entitled to the entire Yerusha. And v'nechzei didihu, and therefore the entire estate should belong to me. And Yavam amar at bari didi at. And the Yavam says, no, what are you talking about? You're my son. And therefore, v'leis lech v'lo midi. Therefore, you know how much of the estate you're titled to currently? Nothing. Zero. The entire estate belongs to me, says the brother who did the mitzvah of Yibum. So, have a mamun amuta basafik, a mamun amuta basafik cholkin. So the Gemara says this is a classic scenario of money that is in a state of doubt. And as Tosfos here points out, and Tosfos in the beginning of Bava Metzia points out, there is no muchzak, there's no current possessor of the money. If there is a current possessor of the money, that obviously is going to play an important variable in the discussion. But right now, currently, there is no possessor of the money, there's no muchzak. And so therefore, this is a classic case of money that's in a state of doubt. And what do you do with money in a state of doubt? Yachloku, you divide that money. Okay, that's case number one. That's nice, that's simple.
What happens to her?
Meaning what? Meaning this? We're talking about Yerusha right now. So
right. She's not inheriting?
No. The inheritance goes to the men. If there's no man involved, so then the women inherit. But if there's a man involved, so the man inherits.
Yeah, but she can claim that...
What's her claim?
That if he's the son of the Yavam, then it belongs to her.
No. She's not... In other words, we're not talking about her estate. We're talking about his estate. The issue is his possessions. When I say his, I mean originally the brother. Then he died. And then again, if the mitzvah of Yibum was accomplished, so that means that all the estate went to the Yavam. The entire estate went to the Yavam. And that's exactly the conflicting claims. The Yavam says, I did the mitzvah of Yibum. You're my kid, I did the mitzvah of Yibum. Therefore, all that estate is entitled to me. And the son is saying, well, no, you're not my father. Again, we don't know. But the best claim he could make is, you're not my father. That man who died is my father, and therefore that entire state should belong to me. And you didn't do the mitzvah of Yibum.
Yes, if the father did do the mitzvah of Yibum, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't he already like inherit everything from the
Well, that's
father?
Exactly. That's part of the son's claim. Part of the son's claim is you didn't do.
The son is a baby. He's like.
I understand. When we say claim, we're saying this is what we would advocate on behalf of the son. Claim over here doesn't mean he's actually going to articulate. Claim over here just simply means, okay, in a best case scenario, this is what he would argue. And what he would argue is, you didn't do the mitzvah of Yibum, right? You married her 2 months after my father died, which you shouldn't have done, and you're not my father. Okay.
Regarding the wife, isn't he supposed to discharge her the Mishnah's last case? That he has to discharge the wife, right?
Yes.
You have to give a get to the wife.
No, again.
There was
a possible mitzvah vibum over here, but what he should have done, what the brother should have done, is wait another month to see.
But he would not live with the wife anymore, right?
That's a different issue. In other words, he can't live over there anymore because she may be Eishes Ach. Okay, but again, those are good questions, but not relevant to the discussion we're having right now. We're just dealing with what happens to the Yerusha. Let's just deal with the Yerusha right now. In other words, there are going to be other consequences. But right now, I mean, there's going to be eight of them. We've only gone through one. We're going to just focus on the Yerusha. Number two. Safak v'nei yavam shabar lachlok v'nechzei misna. Okay, now, case number two now. Again, the starting points of all these cases are the same. So the Yavam did Yibam 2 months early, 2 months after the death, and the baby came out 7 months later, and he's a Safak. Okay, so, and now he's coming to divide the estate. The estate of the Yavam died. And before the Yavam died, the Yavam had other sons as well. And those other sons, let's just for argument's sake, there were two other sons. And the reason why I came up with number two is because that's the assumption we're going to go throughout the rest of the discussion. So they had two other sons, and now the two other sons are now fighting with the Safek in terms of the estate. And let's look at each one of their claims. And again, we're making the best claim that each one can make. Safek Amarahu Gavra Bar Misnahu. So the Safek comes along and says, look, let me identify myself. I'm not your brother. Okay, right. I am the son of the original dead guy, and that means then that half of the estate of what Dad left down for you guys is really mine, because half of that estate belonged to the dead brother, the original dead brother, not the new dead guy, but the original dead brother, and that. But I'm his son, so therefore I'm entitled to that. So I'm entitled right now to half of the estate. Because again, the Yavam, we're talking now where the Yavam dies. And the Yavam now is living in a state over for his children. His children are right now two definitive sons and one Suffolk. So what the Suffolk's claim is that half of that estate never belonged to Dad to begin with. Not as a bechor.
So it's basically a carry on from the previous case, no?
No. What?
Is it carrying from the first case where they had the
correct. Another way, right.
So you're still laying claim.
Right, correct. That's no, that agreed. Agreed.
Why
would
he get his claim on half?
Yeah, so let's do this again. So the reason why he's claiming for half is because of the estate that was left over for the kids, the suffolk is saying that I'm not your brother. That guy who just died is not my father. So we're gonna go back now to the original death of my father, who he claims is his father,
right.
And he says that when he died, that his estate should not have gone over to the brother.
Right.
His estate should have come to me.
So the whole thing has to go to the
No, because the brother also has money. Well, let's assume right now that the brother also has money. So in other words, he inherited the estate of the first dead brother. Let's call him Reuven. And then he also is leaving some of his estate as well. Right now, for the purposes of illustration, let's say that they're in equal amounts.
Okay.
So fine. So now what he's claiming is half the money, meaning the money that originally came from Reuven, really belongs to me because Reuven's my father.
But
okay. The Bechor issue, I'm going to ignore, meaning, you're right, let's start off there. You're right, Bechor obviously becomes a consideration. I'm going to ignore Bechor just to keep everything simpler. I'm just for the purpose of simplifying. But you're right, if there's Bechor, then there's... Again, we're just dealing with the basic claims. And the Bnei Yavam are now going to claim, Amri at Achinuat. And they're going to claim, no, you're our brother. Meaning this is the best claim they can make. Meaning, look, they can't concede his point, because if they concede his point, so then they're losing half the estate. So now they're not going to do that. But what they will do, however, say to him, look, you're our brother. And therefore, Menasahu de Islach Behadan. And therefore, you have a portion together with us. So again, if assuming the three brothers and leave Bechor out of the discussion, so that means you're, at best you're entitled to a third. So right, so his claim is to a half and their claim is to a third. So some Rabban come into Rav Mishar Shalemem Rav Masnitzanhi. So now what happens in this case? Excuse me. He says, the suffix says, I'm entitled to half the estate, and they say no, a third. Okay, so now what? So the Gemara says, well, let's think about it in these terms. Let's compare it to a Mishnah, which we're going to see much later on in the Masechta. And at the rate we're going, much later. Much later on. But let's see. The Mishnah later on says, "Who in the Yarosh Osam Mehim Yarshim Oso." So the Mishnah over there describes the following scenario. We have, basically, it's similar to our scenario, but we have, let's go Reuven and Shimon, but let's not, they don't even have to be, they don't have to even be brothers. But anyway, but you have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven has a bunch of kids, and then he dies, and then his wife remarries, and again too early, and then Shimon has, they can't be brothers. Just sorry, I'm thinking out loud. Right, if he wants to have kids, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Okay, so anyway, so Reuven, let's not say Reuven and Shimon, let's call it Reuven and Yitzchak. Okay, they're not brothers. Reuven has a bunch of kids, and then right before he dies, maybe he impregnated his wife, we don't know. And the problem is that Yitzchak then married her 2 months later and had a child 7 months later, and then Yitzchak had a bunch of kids after that. Okay, so we have a bunch of definitive kids from Reuven, we have a bunch of definitive kids from Yitzchak. And we have this kid in the middle who we don't know. Was it Reuven's kid or was it Yitzchak's kid? So where does he stand in terms of Yerusha? He is a lost cause in terms of Yerusha. He's also a lost cause in terms of identifying who his father is, but he's a lost cause in terms of Yerusha, and for obvious reason. Because every time he turns to one of the families and says, hey, I'm your brother, they say, no, you're their brother. Right. Don't come here. Go there. And the other set of brothers can make the same legitimate claim. And the Mishnah later on says, "Hu einu yarish osam." So he doesn't inherit with them. But then it gets worse. If you can imagine, it gets worse. What happens if he dies and he doesn't have any children? This kid in the middle, right? Literally, in this case, the middle child. So what if he dies? So now, if he dies and he has no kids, so now the brothers inherit. Which set of brothers exactly? We don't know. Each one of them has the same equal claim to his estate, so his estate gets divided amongst the brothers. So, if the fathers die, he has no claim to their estate, and if he dies, they both have equal claims to his estate. Okay, good. That's the Mishnah later on, and truth of the matter is, it's a very straightforward Mishnah. It makes perfect sense. So, what the Gemara now would like to argue is, it should be no different in our case over here. Now, that's a very strange comparison, as the Gemara is about to point out. But the Gemara right now is attempting to compare that Mishnah and Daf Kuf to our Mishnah over here. Not our Mishnah, but our case over here. And the Gemara says, V'hacha Ibcha. And over here, what we're just going to do is we're going to invert it. And watch. So the Gemara says, look, because in that case over there, on the Kuf, on the Daf Kuf Mishnah, so each one of the brothers are saying to the middle child, look, you have to bring evidence. Meaning right now, you may be our brother, but we don't know and you don't know. And so, like any time someone's trying to extract money from us, you have to bring evidence, positive evidence, not questionable evidence, but absolute evidence that you're a brother, and then you can take the money. But until that point in time, you can't. You can't make the claim that you're a brother, definitively, and therefore you're not entitled to any money. So what the Gemara would like to offer now over here is basically a similar argument. Amrlu, I see Rayu Shkulu. So now the Suffolk, I know this sounds strange, but this is the Gemara's argument right now. The Suffolk says to the brother, I right now am making the definitive argument. Meaning, either way, I'm entitled to the money. Now again, where do you stand? I stand at either I'm entitled to half of it or I'm entitled to a third of it. But either way you slice it, I'm entitled to money. So his claim falls under the category of Vadai. Now, again, that's strange because he's not a Vadai. That's exactly the point. He's a Suffolk. But either side of the argument, however, entitles him to money. And not all of it, obviously, but
Vadai means that he's going to get some money.
Correct. Vadai for sure means he's going to get some money. I'm a little Misharsha Midami. So Misharsha says, come on, let's not compare those two cases. Because Hasamino Vadai Viyu Safek, the Gemara says, again, there, the strength of the claim of the two sides, the Reuven children, the Yitzchak children, the strength of their claim comes from the fact that they know whose son they are. They know who they are. They're coming from a position of strength because they're Vadai. But over here, everyone's guessing. No one knows for sure what's going on. So it's true. Both sides of his claim entitles him to money. That may be true. But that doesn't make his claim Vadai. All it does is just simply say, look, with it, whichever way you slice it.
But it's still the same mother.
But again, the mother doesn't matter. Meaning, and forgive me for saying it, and don't take me out of context, but we're talking about Yerusha right now. And in Yerusha, the mother doesn't play a role in Yerusha. So Ela idami lemasis and lahadamia. So the Gemara says, okay, so you're right. In other words, the comparison between this case and the case over there in the Mishnah Daf Kuf is not a good comparison. So the Gemara says, so let's compare it to the following. It's a case that we haven't even explored yet, which we're going to do so momentarily, but the case goes like this. Safik b'nei Yavam, we're talking now about the Safik together with the children of the Yavam, Shabal Lachlok b'nechse Yavam, where they're coming to divide the estate not of the original dead brother, but now of the Yavam who died. They say to him, look, you want our dad's money? Yeah, why don't you first bring evidence that you're in fact our brother? You don't know. In other words, you could have been the son of the first brother, of Reuben, not of Shimon, our father. You don't know. So bring evidence and then you can come ahead and take. So in other words, if anything, we would compare it, meaning we would compare, not the second case, obviously, but we would compare the Mishnah Daf Kuf to that scenario over there, where he doesn't know, and because he doesn't know, so therefore, the other brothers will say to him, bring evidence of who you are, identify yourself positively, and then you can, and then you're entitled to a piece of the claim.
And the
Yavam
has died already?
Exactly. In other words, they're dividing his estate. Okay, case number three. Well, we just said it, but now we get to say it again, because now the Gemara is actually treating it as the principal case. So we now have the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam, they're coming to divide the estate of the Yavam. And it's after the Yavam already was entitled to the state of the Yavam. It was after the Yavam already got the estate of the one who died. Now, mind you, by the way, that the fact that he took the estate of the one who died in of itself is questionable. Because again, we go back to the root of the whole case, which is, we don't know if that son that was produced was his son, which means that he fulfilled the mitzvah of Yibam, which means that he's entitled to the entire Yerusha of the dead brother of Reuven, or no, maybe it's Reuven's kid, which means then, of course, that he would be entitled to nothing. Okay, so at root of this case is really a question in of itself. But the Gemara now says, okay, but let's get past that, if we can. And let's say the Yavam took claim to the entire estate of Reuven. Shimon to claim to the entire state of Reuben based on the assumption, although it may be faulty, that he in fact did the mitzvah of Yibum. And now Shimon dies, and now the kids are dividing the estate. So the Bnei Yavam Amri Aisirai Dachunad Ushkol. So the Bnei Yavam says, look, why don't you bring a proof that you're our brother and therefore you're entitled, you'll be entitled to the estate of our father. Amalu Safek. So now the Safek looks at them and says, gentlemen, you need to think about this a little bit more clearly. Right? Mace Manavshaichu. He says, think about both sides of the argument. Look, if you want to claim that I'm your brother, so that's good. Meaning that'll work out well for you because then I'm only entitled to a portion of the estate. The I bar misna ana, but if you want to take the other side of the claim, which is that really I am the son of the other guy, you know who the other guy was? So havli palga. That's half of the estate. Meaning, what you're really saying then is that your father never was really entitled to the estate of the dead brother. The plaga chusim bahadai. Okay, good. So the suffix now turns to the brothers and says, look, your best argument seems to be that I'm your brother, because then I'm only going to get a third of the estate. But then your other argument, which is, no, you're not our brother, well, then that means then that I'm really Reuven's son, which means that Reuven's entire estate, which went to dad, or who you guys think is dad, my dad, really goes to me, and then I'm really entitled to half the estate. So you know what this really is a question of? And this comes up so many times in legal proceedings, even in current legal, in legal settings, and that is that do we open up a previous case? Meaning, what Shimon did is Shimon entitled himself to the entire estate of Reuven. Now, was that right or was that not right? It's questionable, but he did. And now a new case opens up, and that is now that Shimon died, and now the kids are looking to divide Shimon's estate, and now do we get to open up the previous case in order to look at this case? And the Gemara says that is a basic machlokas that comes up a number of times throughout the Gemara. So Rabbi Abba Amar Rav Kam Dina Rav Yirmi Amar Hadadina Dina. This is exactly a case. Do we have the right as legal proceedings to open up a previously closed case or a previously adjudicated case in order to look at this case as well? Right? Somewhat similar to double jeopardy, although I don't think they're exactly the same, but the basic idea is once the ruling, that's it. It's been ruled. So in the previous case, once it's been ruled, even if, in other words, think about it, the previous case was ruled perhaps erroneously. Okay. But now we're looking at this new case, and that is the division of Shimon's estate, and what the Suffolk is arguing is, yeah, you know what? This whole question of the division of Shimon's estate may be built on the false premise that Shimon was entitled to Reuven's entire estate, which may be false. So what he would like to do is reopen the previous case. Do we do that or do we not do that? The Gemara says, that's the question. Rav Yirmiyah Amar Hadar Din, Rav Yirmiyah says, yes, we can go back and look at previous cases, and I'm sorry, I read that out of order. Rabbi Abba Amar Rav Kam Dina, Rav Yirmiyah Amar Hadar Dina. The Gemara says, exactly the machlokas. Rav Abba Amar Rav says, Kam Dina, no, once we close the case now is closed. And so now, that would mean in this particular scenario that the children of Shimon can now legitimately look at Reuven and say, you may not be our brother.
No, they can't, because then the father claims that...
But the father,
there was no child, right? If they assume that the father is entitled to Yerusha,
right,
automatically he's,
right, but
he's
the
his son.
Right, but the father understood. Point understood. But the father's now is dead, and that was predicated in the previous case, and the previous case is now closed, and that's exactly the point. Kamdina. Kamdina means that we don't reopen a previous case. And Rav Yirmiyah Amar Hadadina, Rav Yirmiyah says, no, we are entitled to open up the previous case. Lema Beplukta Da Admon Rabbanan Kamifligi. The Gemara would like to suggest now that this question may be predicated, may be a machlokis between Admon and Rabbanan. This is at the end of Ksuvos, where the Gemara deals with the following scenario, having nothing to do with what we're talking about, but just on the principles of Kamdina and Hadadina. Okay, I mean, you and I are not saying much different than one another, meaning, I understand it's
so the conclusion, is opening the case is going to say, are you the father or not? He's accepted the father, and he's getting
the fact that
close case, now he's the son.
Right, right, okay.
So why is it don't open?
Because the fact that Shimon helped himself to the entire state of Reuven, again, that may have been false, it may have been erroneous, but it happened.
Okay.
is it really?
Okay, good. All right, let's.
Is there like a time component to this? If there's like a 3 year, a certain time elapses, then
I don't know. I don't know about that. That's, you're talking about chazaka. Chazaka only works if it's undisputed.
Why are we taking certain conclusion and not another conclusion?
Okay. Look, I understand, but let's just again, let's just hear it. Let's hear it out. The Gemara says this is a machlokes between Admon and the Chachamim. Kamifli did not learn to the Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in the Ksuvos. Meisha halach lemedina sayam. So let's say a person owned a piece of property and he had access to his piece of property. In other words, there was a path that allowed him access into his property. And in a moment, you'll see. I'll paint the full picture to see exactly what just happened. He went away. He went away for, let's say, a number of years, and he comes back. Obviously, the property still belongs to him. He's still the owner of property. But what happened is Abdullah derech shahay sadehu. But there was a path that allowed him access, and that path went through somebody else's property, but he lost it. Meaning that the other field owners who were contiguous to his property basically mowed it over, plowed it over, right, planted in it. In other words, he lost. He didn't know where it was. Okay? There was no maps. There were no surveys that were done that helped him find it. Okay, anyway. So now, Adman Amar Yelech Biktsara. So Adman takes the position of Yelech Biktsara, meaning whatever the shortest path is that allows him access to his land is the one that he can assume is his. And the Chachamim say, look, you're going to have to buy rights to get to your land. In other words, you're going to have to go to one of the contiguous landowners and you're going to have to buy a path. And if it costs 100 money, so be it, right? To this week's Parsha, right? Avram overpaid for the property. Okay. 100 money, he's just throwing out a number, meaning even if you have to pay an exorbitant value, you do so. Oh, Yifrach Ma'avir, or I'll give you another option, and that is flap your arms really fast, and hopefully you'll fly, and hopefully you will land, therefore, on your property. It's the Chachamim's way of simply saying, look, that's your choice. Your choice are to overpay for the property or to just make it into the land. Can I just share with you? I know we're behind, but just very quickly, I thought it was beautiful. I was reading Emes Yaakov yesterday on the Parsha Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. So he says such a wonderful pshat. He says, why does the Gemara? Sorry, I'm so entrenched in the Avyomi. Why does the Torah tell us about the death of Sarah and Avram purchasing the property? Meaning it's good. It's an episode by Avram Avinu, but you know, the Asar Nisyonos are over. The 10 tests are over. Meaning Kedis Yitzchak is the apex, and then that's it. And then we don't. It's just basically it's like an epilogue. It's like the rest of his life. But what do we care? So Rabbeinu Yonah, you know Rabbeinu Yonah, and this is a Perusha Mishnah. So he says that the 10th test is actually the beginning of this week's Parsha. The purchasing of the property, it was a land that was promised to Avram Avinu, and yet he has to buy it, and that's the 10th test. But okay, that's Rabbeinu Yonah. Not dismissing it, but most Rishonim, the Rambam, Rashi, say no. The Akedah was the 10th test. So the Rav Yaakov says, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky suggests such a beautiful pshat. He says, you know what the story is coming to teach us? It's that we have to emulate our forefathers on Avram Avinu, and we have to be generous. Meaning, Avram Avinu overpaid. And Rav Yaakov says, and that's the mitzvah, though. I know, we sometimes don't have that reputation, but that Avram Avinu has to, in other words, we have to emulate Avram Avinu. If we overpay, it's okay.
By so, retail?
By retail. I said, it's okay to be generous. It's more than okay to be generous, meaning that's the mitzvah of Avram Avinu. He was generous. He was a generous human being, and we should emulate that mitzvah of being generous. I thought it was... Yeah, it's a beautiful shot. Anyway, see, you can see it inside. It's the beginning of this week's Emes Yaakov. Anyway, back to our Gemara over here. So good. So those are your two options: either Derek Tzara, either by a short path, or Anman says take the shortest path there, and the Chachamim say no. You are basically at the mercy of the contiguous landowner, and if you want access to your property, you're going to have to pay through the nose if necessary in order to gain access. V'havinimba, that's the Mishnah. And then the Gemara wants to know the Rabban and Shapir Kama Admon. And we turn to the Chachamim and say, you know, Admon seems to have a very rational position, which is presumably the path that you had the path. It's not like you didn't have it. You had the path, and presumably it's a logical assumption to make that the path that leads to your property is the shortest path. Why would you assume otherwise? So Rav Yehuda Merav gives now more context to the case and helps us understand now the principal arguments of Admon versus the Chachamim. And Kagosha Kifu Arba Bene Adam Arba Ruchos. So the Gemara says we're talking about a scenario where your land is landlocked it's surrounded by four properties, and there are four different owners to the four different properties. Oh, now we get it. And now we understand the Achim Aitam and Admon. And now we turn the table on Admon, because now I understand the position of the Chachamim. Each one of the landowners, there are four different ones, each one of the landowners say, look, I know you had a path going into your property, and I really feel sorry for you, and I hear your plight. But it wasn't my land, meaning there are three other people who are locking your land in. So I'm going to make the argument, and let's even give him a degree of sincerity. Let's even say that he thinks he's right. I'm going to give you send you three other people who possibly may have that path that led to your land. And why are you coming after me when there are three other people who I think are one of those three other people had that path to your land? Good. So now that we have the context, now I totally understand the Chachamim. Now we turn to our attention to Admon. Admon, what do you think? So V'amar Rava Barba Das Mikol Charba Barba Das Mikol Chad Kol Yamalo Plig Dematzu Matchilei. So the Gemara says, look, if there are four landowners, and they were originally four landowners, or if there was originally one landowner surrounding the landlocked property, and then they sold it to four different people, so you know what? We're not even going to argue. We're not even going to dispute it. Meaning, right, each landowner can make a legitimate claim and say, look, I know, I feel bad for you, I hear you, but it wasn't my land. There are three other people. Go to them. And of course, each one of them can say the same thing. So then his choices now are, and everyone agrees, there's no machlokas. His choices now are overpay for a path to get to his property or learn how to fly. But kipligi b'chadas mikol charba. But now we're describing a scenario where there's one landowner surrounding all four of his, all four sides of his property. And one landowner, but so where does he have a leg to stand on? He bought it from four different people. Meaning that originally when the guy left for his long trip, so those lands, four lands, were owned by four different people. And then one person bought up all those properties. And so now when he comes back, he finds two things. A, change of ownership, right? There's a new landowner in town. It's only one, and it's not four different people. And he no longer has a path to his property. That one landowner plowed over the path. He turns to the one landowner, and he says to him, okay, I had a path. Produce it for me. Give me back my path. So Admon takes the position, exactly. Meaning now that he's talking now to one landowner, and he says to him, look, you are the owner of all four lands that surround my property. There was a path going to that property. Okay, now give it back to me. I'll let you even pick it. But in other words, I need access to my land, and you're going to produce for me a path. V'rabbanan Sarve, now what's the Chachamim's argument? Amar le ishatik shatakt. So the owner now of the four lands, the four surrounding lands, says to the middle guy, to the landlocked guy, look, right now, if you want to be quiet, I'll allow you to be quiet. I'll give you that right. The Elo Majunishtar Lamarayu, because if you keep insisting that I owe you a path, here's what I'm gonna do. You think I really need these properties? Look, I can buy whatever properties I want. I'll sell them to the original owner, because when you left there were four different people. I'll sell them to the original owner and then you'll be stuck. So right now you wanna come after me, but I'll threaten you back with You keep coming after me. I'm just gonna give up these properties to four original owners, and then you'll have no claim whatsoever. And you know that once we go back to the original scenario of the four original of four different owners, so then you're gonna be stuck. So and now maybe what the Gemara is suggesting is, what is this a question of? Kamdina hadadina, whether or not we can reopen a previous case, or we have no right to reopen a previous case. Meaning the machlokas between Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yirmiyah, who are Amorayim, fit into this machlokas of Admon and the Chachamim. Amlecha Rabbi Abba anadamri afilu kadmon. So Rabbi Abba says, don't do that. Don't limit me to one Tana's position and exclude me from the other Tana's position. So I could even be going like Admon. Adkan lo kam Admon asam ela mishun damale mimanav shach. Darki chad gabech. Who? Because look, Admon says, Mimanovshach. Meaning, right now, as we're currently surveying the scenario, there are four different properties. All of them are going into my field. So I got to pass through one of them. And what Rashi explains over here, his claim at the current state is Bari. It is an absolutely definitive claim. He's right. His path exists in one of the four surrounding properties. So right now, that is a strong argument. So I can agree with Admon that in that particular case, yeah, he's entitled to the way. But in our case over here, meaning in the going now back to case number three, where the Suffolk and the Bnei Yavam are splitting up the property of the Yavam, where there, part of the issue is the Suffolk is not, and for that matter, the Bnei Yavam don't have certainty over each of their claims. And that's why in that particular case, we could say we're going to go back to we're going to have to reopen a previous case. Okay, that's one distinction we can make. So Miko Memer Achiv Rab Yirmiyah Amar Lacha, and Rab Yirmiyah also can say Anad Amrei Afil LeRabbanan, and Rab Yirmiyah says don't do that to me, meaning don't pigeonhole me into the position of Admon. I can also agree with the Chachamim. I can look Amir Rabbanan Hasam Ela Mishan Damalei Ishatik Shatik, because look, in the case of the landlock, so the person owning the four surrounding lands can literally say to him, look, here's what I'm prepared to do. I'm prepared to actually sell the land back to the original owners. It's not an empty threat. I mean, it could be that he's bluffing. Could be that he really doesn't want to do that. But it's within his power. He certainly has the right to do that. And so therefore, that represents not just words, that's a real threat. But over here, right now, There's no course of action that can be taken from this point going forward. The only claims that are made are based on previous historical events. So it could very well be that in this case over here, the strength of the four landowner is based on the fact that he can actually have a course of action going forward, as opposed to the case of the Yavam, the Bnei Yavam, and the Suffolk, where there is no course of action that can be taken from this point going forward. Everything is simply predicated on what happened historically. Okay. Case number five. Wait. On the question of how do dinner come dinner? Okay, I don't know. I didn't research it. Okay, I mean he has the Rambam signing with come dinner, but again though you have to know what come dinner means. It stands with previous case. He cannot reopen previous cases.
So Rambam said not to go back.
But again, I don't know how globally we'll take that. In our context, maybe, but as the Gemara itself pointed out, you know, there may be mitigating circumstances. Okay. Safek v'yabim shebal lachlok b'nechse saba. Okay, case number five, we're now on the top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, for about six lines from the top of the Amud. We now are dealing with case number six, and we have now the Safek, together with the Yavam, and they're coming to divide the estate of Grandpa. Grandpa over here, in other words, Shimon's father, right? Reuben and Shimon had a father, obviously. That's why they're brothers. And he didn't die yet. So in other words, he still has an estate. And right now, he died. Let's call him Yitzchak. Okay, I know I used the name already previously before, but here makes sense. No, I'm sorry, let's call him Yaakov. Right, that makes... Okay. So Shimon and Reuben had a father by the name of Yaakov. And now, after Reuben died, after Shimon performed the mitzvah of Yibum, again, possibly, questionably, and now that they have that Reuben and Shimon have a son. Again, that's the Suffolk. We don't know. We don't know whose son it is. It may be Reuben's son. It may be Shimon's son. And now Yaakov dies. Suffolk Amar Hai Gavra Bar Misnahu. So now the Suffolk says, look, I'm going to suggest that I am Reuben's kid. And as such, you know what that entitles me to? Half of the estate of Grandpa. So Upaga Didihu. So therefore, half the estate. Because, again, what I am right now is the heir apparent of Reuben. And as such, Reuben and Shimon, again, leave Bechor out of the discussion, Reuben and Shimon are entitled to half of the estate of Yaakov, the father. So good, so give me half. Amar at bari, Yavam Amar at bari didi at. And the Yavam says, no, I'm going to make the claim that you're my son, Evelesech v'lamidi, and therefore, you're entitled to zero. Have a Yavam vada v'safik safik. So the Gemara now points out, as far as the claim go, Shimon's claim over here is much stronger than the claim of their son. I say their son, I mean Reuben and Shimon's son, the Suffolk. Right, Shimon's claim is much better, because here's what Shimon knows for sure. He is Yaakov's son. There's no question about that. That makes him a Vadai. And the Suffolk right now, look, he's making a claim, but we know the fact is that he doesn't know whose son he is. So he's coming from a position of suffik. And when I have two claims, one being a vadai and the other claim being a suffik, we're always going to side with the vadai. Vein suffik mosi midei vadai. Good, that's case number 5. That one was admittedly straightforward. Case number 6. Suffik uvnei yavam shabau lachlok benichsei saba. So here we're going to have generation 3 inheriting from generation number 1. Okay, so Yaakov dies. The Yavam already is no longer with us. And so now what I have is the B'nai Yavam, right? Shimon's kids, Shimon's definitive kids, together with the Suffolk. And now Suffolk, Amar Ul Gavra Bar Mistahu. So again, now, right, all this now is pretty straightforward. So the B'nai, so the Suffolk says, I'm Reuven's kid. Again, he doesn't know that for sure, but that's the best claim he can make. I'm Reuven's kid as such, I'm entitled to half the estate of the grandfather. And the Bnei Yavam says, you're the Bnei Ach. You're a brother. So, Umenasi Islach Ba'adan. And so, therefore, here's what you're entitled to. A portion of our state, meaning you're one of us. And so, therefore, you're not entitled to half, you're entitled to a third. Pagad de Kamule Shakli. So, Pagad de Kamodile Shakli. So, the Gemara says, so here's how it's going to go. So, the half that is agreed to, so that they're going to take. Tilsa de kamodele shakel. And the third that they agree to, he's going to take. Meaning, look, even in both of their claims, let's take a look at it from the perspective of the suffix. What is he saying? He's saying half belongs to me, but half belongs to you. Okay, I'll give you that. And what they're saying is, no. A third of it does in fact belong to you, but the rest of it belongs to us. So there is a point of admission from both of their ends in terms of what each one is entitled to. So the Gemara says, the two surviving brothers of Shimon, so they're going to get half. Because even the suffix is going to agree that they're going to get half. And the one-third of the estate, they're going to agree that he's entitled to. So they get a half, the sons of Shimon are going to get half. He, the suffix, is going to get a third. So what does that leave us with? That leaves us with 1/6. So that leaves us with 1/6. Pashalu danka. So the Gemara says that leaves us now with a 6.
So you got half. The other one got 1/6, right?
No, the other one got a third. One got a half, and the other got a third. Okay, so that's, that leaves us 6. So avi mamon amuta b'safek v'chokin. And so that with 1/6, where does that money lie in dispute? So money that lies in dispute is divided. Okay, that's case number 6. Case number 7. Safek v'yavam b'nechzei safek. So case number 7 and case number 8 we can actually conflate because it's going to be the same conclusion for both of those cases. I have a suffix and I have the Yavam and they're coming to divide the estate of the suffix. Meaning here the suffix dies, leaving an estate. And we have now the grandfather and the Yavam. And the grandfather and the Yavam each making a claim. The Yavam's claim is, that's my kid. The grandfather's claim is, no, that's not your kid. That was Reuven's kid, meaning, and I am the heir apparent of Reuven. So I'm the next in line for Reuven, so therefore the entire thing goes to me. And each claim is based on the fact that we don't know whose kid he actually is, Reuven and Shimon, or Saba v'Safik b'Nichsei Yavam, or the Gemara goes through another scenario, which again is going to result in the same conclusion. I have the grandfather and the Suffolk, and they're dividing the estate of the Yavam, or not dividing, they're claiming the estate of the Yavam. I gave away the punchline. They're claiming the estate of the Yavam. And again, the suffix claim is, that's my father. The grandfather's claim is, no, it's not. That's your uncle. But that's my kid. So I'm first in line before you. So Havi Mama and Amuta b'Suffolk, in both cases, number 7 and 8, that is money that lays in a state of suffix v'chokin, and therefore it's to be divided. Okay, good. 8 different cases in which we now are describing the Yerushas. The principles are pretty straightforward. Right, the exciting parts that we went over this morning, the questions of kamdina, hadadina, you know, those are the finer points of this discussion. But the issues of chazaka and mamon amuta b'safek, those are operating principles in terms of what to do with money that lays in question. Okay, we start the next mishnah. This is a mishnah in Ksuvos, and really this discussion belongs in Ksuvos. And it lands here because it deals with Yibam and the Shomer's Yavam. But we'll get to hear this. We're going to hear this Mishnah twice in the course of the next year. Once now, and once approximately about a year from now, in Ksuvos. Okay, mark the date. Let's see how close I am to correct.
Not after this.
No? Ksuvos, I think Ksuvos is next. I'm pretty sure. About a year from now. Even less. Okay, so the Saba, I'm sorry. Shomer Zav Mishanafal Allah Nechasim. I'm sorry. Shomer Zav Mishanafal Allah Nechasim. So I'm sorry. Before I start with the Mishnah, let's go over the basics. Okay, we're going to be discussing now women and property. Okay, it's a huge discussion, but I'll try to simplify and I'll try to keep everything here succinct. I'm looking at the time and I'm looking at how far behind we are. But let's just go over the basics of women and property. Okay, a woman owns property. A woman is entitled to inherit property if there's no men. In other words, she has as much access and ability to inherit as a man does. Okay, a woman in marriage, however, there is a contractual agreement between the wife and the husband, and that contractual agreement has a better name to it. It's called the ksuva. Okay, we generally view the ksuva as the settlement. Which, truth of the matter is, yes, that's true. Meaning, that's what the ksuva is. The ksuvament is basically a prenuptial agreement. I know the prenup is very popular nowadays, but there is already a prenuptial agreement. It's called the ksuva. It's a prenuptial agreement between husband and wife, and basically says that in the case of either death or divorce, you're entitled to a particular settlement. What the settlement is, so we're going to be discussing in the beginning of ksuva. It's not an absolute figure, right? 200 zuz is generally speaking the number that's thrown around. But as we'll see when we get to ksuvas, that number fluctuates. But the ksuva is more than just a settlement. The ksuva also creates certain financial obligations from both sides, from the husband to the wife and from the wife to the husband. So let's go over the very basics. What a ksuva, and by the way, another very important point, even though there are two stages of marriage, there's erisin, there's nisuin. And at the point of erisin, they are married, they are husband and wife. If she commits adultery, that is a capital offense. Nevertheless, in terms of all financial contractual obligations, they do not kick in till the point of nisuin, the second stage of marriage. So even though at the first stage of marriage, they're married, but all contractual obligations only kick in at the point of nisuin, not at the point of erisin. Good, those are facts. Now we move on from there, and we go on to what exactly those contractual obligations are. When a man marries a woman, so he's obligated, obviously, to support her and to redeem her and basically and to provide clothing for her. And in other words, all the basic financial obligations of a husband to his wife. What about the wife's property? So the wife's property is within the rights of the husband. Even within the wife's property, we're going to divide into two different components. One we're going to call Nichsei Tzon Barzel. We're not calling it anything. That's what the Gemara refers to it as. Nichsei Tzon Barzel. Nichsei Tzon Barzel is properties that she goes into a marriage with that she wants an absolute guarantee. So what they're going to do prior to the marriage is that they're going to assess those properties that she's going into a marriage with. And Nichsei Tzon Barzel. Tzon Barzel literally means iron sheep. It's a strange term once you translate it to English, but basically what it means is that those properties are appraised at the time of marriage. The husband with those properties can do whatever he wants with those properties, but at the conclusion of the marriage, either death or divorce, so she, as part of her settlement, is going to be reimbursed for all those properties as appraised at the time of the marriage. That's Nichsei Tzon Barzel. And during the marriage, the husband can do whatever he wants with those properties, but with the understanding, however, of course, that those properties are guaranteed to the wife, the appraised value of those properties. That's Nichsei Tzon Barzel. And then the other set of properties, what's called Nichsei Malug. Nichsei Malug generally are properties that she inherits after she gets married, although the truth of the matter is that even at the beginning of the marriage, you could still have Nichsei Malug property. Nichsei Malug property means that even after marriage, the property is principally, primarily her property, but he's entitled to peros. And now when I say he's entitled, meaning he's the owner of the peros. So we have a classic scenario of she has a kinyan aguf, we just discussed this the other day, and he, the husband, has a kinyan aperos. He's entitled to all the fruit of that comes off the property. That's Nichsei Malug. Okay, and he cannot sell that property. And if the property appreciates or depreciates, that's all suffered by her, not suffered by him. As opposed to the Nichsei Tzon Barzel, where if the property appreciates or depreciates, it doesn't matter. She will get the appraised value of the property as set out from the beginning of the marriage. I know I went through that quickly.
What's the difference between Malug and I always get
confused. Malug property is hers, but he has rights.
Huh? But so is Tzon Barzel,
is
hers also.
Tzon Barzel is hers, but he has more than rights. He can actually sell that property.
But he owes original value.
Correct.
But Malug he cannot sell.
Right, but right, Malugi cannot sell.
He only has an income interest in
Malugi. Right, that's it. That's correct. Shomer Zavam Shanafal La Nechasim. So now let's go through the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes the Shomer Zavam where she inherits property. Now, this is a Mishnah in Tzuvos, and the Mishnah right immediately before discusses what happens when she inherits property during Erusin. Meaning, before the Nisuin kicks in. In the time of the Gemara, there was a 1-year lapse between Erusin and Nisuin. We don't do that nowadays. Nowadays, it's about 5 minutes between Erusin and Nisuin. When did that change made? I don't know. But I'm venturing to guess a long time ago. But in the time of the Gemara, however, there was a 1-year lapse between the Erusin and the Nisuin, and the Mishnah previously in Ksufis describes the scenario of what happens when she inherits property after Erusin but before Nisuin. What is that property? So really, principally, the property is hers. It's not her husband's. Any property that comes into her after Nisuin, her husband has rights towards. At least Nichse Malug rights to. She can't sell that property. But if it is property that comes in between Erusin and Nisuin, so the previous Mishnah says she should not sell that property, but if she does, the sale is a valid sale. Our mission now is going to be describing a relationship between a man and a woman, not husband and wife, but Yavam Yavama, which is why the Mishnah is coming up over here in the Masechta Yavamas. So Shomeres Yavam, she's now Shomeres Yavam. She's not married. She's more than engaged, as we would use in the English terminology over here. There's a Zika, so they're connected.
The question is, when does it become marital?
Right, you're right. Correct. Correct. Shomer Yavam Shanafal on Nechasim. Odom Beishamay Beisol Shomacheres V'Nosenes V'Kayim. So here, Beishamay Beisol agree that she could sell all that property, as opposed to an Erusin, if she inherited property during her Erusin period. So Beisol says she should not sell it. Now, if she does, okay, but Lechachil she should not sell it. Here, the connection between Yavam and Yavama is less than that of Erusin, where she has absolutely freedom to sell that property as she wants to. Mesa Maya Sebiksuvasa Umanachasem Hanachasim Yosimima. Now what if she dies? What happens to her estate? And again, she died obviously before the mitzvah of Yibum was performed. So it's not his wife, it's his Shomer Yava. So what happens to her properties? Now there are two things described over here. There's number one, Ksuvasa, which is a reference to her Nechseh Tzom Barzal. Number two, there's a reference to the Nechseh Malog. Beishame Omrim Yachloku. Yorshe Habalim Yorshe Av. Beishame says it's divided. Beisol Omrim Nechasim Becheskasam. And Beisol says all properties remain status quo. Her properties remain status quo. Ksuva Becheskas Yorshe Habal. In terms of the Ksuva, the husband heirs are entitled to the Ksuva. And Nechasim Nechasim Yasim Ema Becheskas Yorshe Av. And as far as the Nechasim Malug property is concerned, that goes to the father.
What about
Tzom Barzal?
That goes to the husband?
Wait, just give me a moment. Now, what if he marries her? Now, if he marries her, so that means it's his wife, and the only difference between this wife versus any other wife is that the ksuva, the property that's leaned against the ksuva will be the original husband, not his property. The Gemara later on will try to wrap its head around that last line of the Mishnah, because didn't he inherit all the property of his brother? So what does the Mishnah mean by that? The Gemara later on will discuss. Okay, I did not explain well exactly what the assignment is in terms of her properties if she dies, and part of the reason why is because of time, and the second reason why is because really when we start with the Gemara tomorrow, you will see that the Gemara itself will struggle to understand exactly whose property goes to whom and why should that be in the event that she dies.